the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sopvet.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sopvet.
Which makes this Scaredy Cats, the fun in the sun edition. So grab your surfboards and your go-gurts, because it's about to get tubular up in here.
I don't know about tubular, but it definitely is supposed to be above 30 again today. So if you hear weird noise, it's fans in the background. Because as much as I love this podcast, I don't want to get heat stroke for it.
And that is degrees Celsius for all of our American friends out there.
Y'all are the only ones who use Fahrenheit. Just switch.
Well, them and that one place.
Sierra Leone?
Sierra Leone, maybe? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's like one small African nation in the United States. And the whole United rest States. Of the world is like, here's a functional temperature system.
So, Vicky, have you ever been on a secret government mission before?
I can't say I have. Although I did once attempt to go to a, like, here's how to join CSIS, which is like the Canadian CIA, basically.
I applied to join CSIS too once.
Nice, but I found out when I got there, this was when I was in my undergrad, that you had to, like, know about this previously and sign up to actually attend, which I think was, in some ways, a test about whether or not you were qualified to join CSIS. Like, can you do spy work for us already to find out you need an RSVP? So, no. My hopes were dashed of going on secret government missions.
Ah, yeah. That's fair. So anyways, the reason why I ask is because today we are going to be watching Annihilation. Made in 2018. So before we get into fun facts about that movie, Vicky, what do you know?
See, I don't know how to answer this one. Because normally it's like I've absorbed a few things through like the pop culture hive mind. But for this one, I actually have read the book, and I know very little about the movie. So I know it's only the first book of the trilogy, which leads me to wonder how well that's going to work, because the first book of the trilogy doesn't really answer any questions.
It's not a conclusive narrative.
No, it's an opening narrative. That's why it's the first book.
Yeah.
I know there's a scene with a bear that's quite distressing, apparently, because our friend Theo was watching Annihilation, saw the bear, had to turn it off and turned around, and their cat was there, which scared the shit out of them. So I know there's a bear that's scary. I know one time you and I were called your family and were like, hey, do you want to go to the movies with us? I think we were watching like Coco or something at the cheap theaters.
Yeah.
And your family was like, no, that's okay. And we were like, okay, no problem. We went inside. Then we went to their house for dinner. Nobody was home. And then they got home an hour later and we were like, where were you guys? And they were like, we went to go see Annihilation in the movie theater. It was the theater playing literally beside the theater you were in. And we were like, why didn't you just tell us that?
Well, they didn't actually point it out. They were like, yeah, we went and saw Annihilation. And I said, you know, what time did you go see Annihilation? They told us. And I said, well, then you would have been literally in the theater right next to ours.
So that's what I know about Annihilation, is so far, is that it caused family strife, there's a scene with a bear, and I've read the book. All which right. I didn't know was a horror book when I bought it. I thought it was just like a sci-fi adventure thing.
And then you learned.
I learned halfway through the third book of the trilogy where I had a panic attack reading a scene, and I was it like, okay, I'm done.
It took you to the third book to realize that you were reading a horror series?
Yeah, I thought it was just like sci-fi.
Wow, alright.
I don't know, it's... It fit just well enough in sci-fi that it didn't strike me as anything other than, like, kind of a creepy sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't work out the point was horror, not, like, solving the alien whatever it is problem.
Sure.
So.
Okay, well, Annihilation was directed by Alex Garland, who also wrote 28 Days Later, which is one of the best zombie movies of all time. He also directed Ex Machina. You recall that one? That's about the,
Isn't that, like, the robot?
The robot, the reclusive, like, AI.
Oscar Isaac is
the AI inventor, and he brings the guy to try and make the robot pass the Turing test.
Yes,
yeah.
But isn't he also, like, locked in the mansion? He can't leave it or something?
Yeah. But we're not talking about that movie, but that's a movie that he did direct. It was written by him as well, and based, as Vicky has pointed out, off of the book by Jeff Vandermeer.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is a good last name.
Yeah.
Vandermeer.
Producers are Scott Rudin, Andrew McDonald, Alan Reich, or Reich. I'm going to choose to say Reich, though. Or Eli Bush.
Is it spelled R-E-I-C-H?
Yes.
That's definitely Reich.
Okay, Reich, then. And Eli Bush, I should say. Stars Natalie Portman as Lena, Oscar Isaac as Kane, Jennifer Jason Leigh as Dr. Ventress, and others.
Natalie Portman is in this movie?
Yeah, she's main character.
I love Natalie Portman.
There you go. You're
she's
about
a delight.
You're going to watch her do some things. Fight a bear.
She's the biologist?
She's, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
Well, it's the main character in the first book.
Yes.
Each book sort of has a different main character.
So the book, the director, Alex Garland, did say that he only read the first book. He never read any of the other books. And he didn't want to make the movie based off of the book so much as make it based off of a dream of the book. Take that how you will.
I sort of just take that as he's lazy and didn't want to read the other two-thirds of the trilogy.
Who the heck knows?
But okay.
Had a budget of $40 to $55 million. Couldn't find conclusive evidence on that. Only returned 43.1.
Ooh, rough.
Flop, flop. Which is why it's on Netflix now, because they sold the rights. Because, yeah, didn't do great.
Maybe if they had made the whole story instead of the first third.
Well, I've heard it also just, I'm not the one saying this, so don't everybody come at me being like, well, you're being all, you know, elitist about this. But I've heard that big criticism of the movie was that it's too intellectual for, like, your standard let's go see a movie in the summer kind of crowd.
To be fair,
and it was confusing.
Depending on how he interpreted the story, I could see that. Like, there are definitely themes in that story that don't fit well into, like, a Friday the 13th slasher narrative.
Yeah, and so that's why I hear it didn't do too great. It was coming up against some other bigger movies, so yeah.
There were a lot of things out that year. I think that was that the same year that Endgame came out in the summer?
That could be, I don't know. But my one factoid about this film is actually that Oscar Isaac was in the middle of filming Star Wars The Last Jedi when he was also filming Annihilation. Luckily, the two studios were right across the street from one another, so he just walked from place to place.
Love it.
To do the things that he needed to do.
I'm excited for when Oscar Isaac wins an Oscar and gives a bomb-ass Oscar speech about white people in Hollywood need to get over themselves.
And also Oscar getting an Oscar.
Also, that will just be delightful.
Yes.
Have you ever seen the picture of him eating hot Cheetos with chopsticks so he doesn't get Cheeto dust on his fingers?
No.
It's great because he looks halfway between a homeless person and undergrad. Like, he's just standing in, like, pajama pants with a bag of Cheetos eating them with chopsticks. It's delightful.
Great. See, they're just like us, too. Them celebrities.
I've definitely never looked at a bag of Cheetos and been like, I need to use chopsticks.
Yeah, that is that's an alien way to eat it. You're right. Maybe they're not like us. So anyways, that's all I've got for Annihilation Part 1. Vicky, did you have anything else?
No, I'm mostly just intrigued what a dream about the thought of a book.
Well, no. You're adding a whole layer there. It was a dream of the book.
But still, I want to know what the dream of the first third of a trilogy turns out in film.
We're about to go watch that dream. So, all right. I've got nothing else either. So that concludes part one. We will be back in part two when we break down that movie for your ears. So stay frosty out there. Hello, we're back with part two of Annihilation, the part of the episode where we are going to be breaking down the plot synopsis for you, everything that goes on in this movie. So if you are not looking for it to be spoiled, then go watch it.
Yes.
Don't complain at us.
It's no longer on Netflix, we discovered, but you can rent it on the PlayStation Store.
Yeah.
Although I would like to call out PlayStation, could you please put closed captions on movies that we can rent from your store.
We don't have the best.
Good lord.
We don't have the best audio setup here for listening to movies, so most of this movie is whispered.
I also have an audio processing disorder, so sometimes even with perfect sound, I'm like, I don't know, that didn't become words.
All the characters are also just like whispering everything, and so we had it turned up to like 85, and then when the actual scares happened, it was like, and it like busted our audio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please just put subtitles as an option, PlayStation.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Not hard. So anyways, Vicky, you want to take us away?
Yeah, so we start with Lena, who's our main character. And I just want to say, I'm trying very hard to describe and judge this separately from the book, which is real hard, because in the book they have, like, names, but then they're very deliberately called, like, the biologist.
Well, I think it's a plot piece in the book that it's important they don't know each other's names.
Exactly.
Because it's less association then.
Yes, and so I definitely, in my notes, occasionally have, like, the biologist or the psychologist if I couldn't remember the name at that particular moment.
Because that's how they're referred to in the book, yeah.
Yes. So I'm trying very hard to see it as like a separate thing. Yeah. Anyway, so we have the biologist Lena, she is a biologist, that's what she does, in a room, and she's in a room with a guy in a hazmat suit being interviewed, and she doesn't seem to know the answers to his questions.
And yeah, she's, and the room that they're in, the interview room, is also surrounded by glass, and there's many, like, dozens and dozens more scientists also wearing hazmat suits, like, listening in to this interview and watching. So it's very, very clear that she is the subject of something very intense that is going on.
Yes, and to skip ahead very slightly, we're going to quickly learn that what is happening in the movie is showing what she's telling in this interview. So occasionally we cut back for transitions to this interview, mm-hmm. but what is happening in the movie has already occurred at the time of that interview. And so we see the very first thing that starts it all, a meteor.
Yeah, a meteor over some nice acoustic guitar as it rolls across the atmosphere before it collides with a lighthouse that is on a beach somewhere.
Yes, and then it transitions to a close-up of a cell splitting. I wanted to say a spell sitting, but that's not correct.
We get our title card and some cell mitosis. Is that what I think it's called?
Yes, I believe so.
And this is where we really learn that Lena is a biology professor because she is in the middle of teaching a class.
Specifically, a medical biology professor. Mm-hmm. She's training med students, and we learn the cell is from a tumor. It's malignant.
Yes.
And so we're going to learn about malignant cells.
This semester, be on the test. And as Lena wraps up that class and leaves the university, she's approached by one of her coworkers, who invites her to a barbecue that he and his wife are putting on. And Lena's like, no, not into it. And he starts mentioning that, you know, she needs to move on.
It's been a year.
It's been a year.
And we work out it's been a year since her husband...
Kane.
Yes. Disappeared, presumed dead, with his military unit.
Yeah, but, like, Lena doesn't know where he went or, like, what his mission was. None of that, because it was top secret.
And nobody will give her any answers.
No.
But it's made fairly apparent she believes he's died.
Mm-hmm.
And so she does not go to the barbecue. She starts repainting her bedroom.
Yeah, and so we get a nice montage of her cleaning up, getting rid of stuff. And then who shows up in the house but Kane?
Who looks very much not deceased, but also seems not quite right, because Lena goes to hug him, and he just, like, stands there and doesn't say anything.
Yeah, he's zombie-like without any of the, like, lesions or arm missing or anything like that. He just kind of stands there and answers very simply.
Yes. We cut to the kitchen where Lena's questioning him, and his answers are very much like hers in the opening scene. Like, it's not like he's trying to be deliberately evasive. It's like he just genuinely has no idea who he is or why he's here. And at one point he mentions he recognizes her.
Yeah, and so Lena starts grilling him. She's like, where you been, man? And he's like, I don't know. What were you doing? I don't know. Who are you with? I don't know. And eventually it's pretty apparent that it's getting nowhere, and he takes a drink out of some water that she's given him, and when he puts the glass down, there's some blood in the water. And he mentions he's not feeling great, and then he just starts spitting up blood everywhere. And she's like, yeah.
Yes.
Apparently.
Just before he drinks from it, though, there's a cool shot of Lena holding his hand behind the glass.
Yeah.
And the movement of the fingers, quite deliberately, I think, as they're refracting through the water, look very much like those cells at the beginning splitting. So
I noted that, too. It was a good shot.
Yes. Then we go to an ambulance, where Kane is just spitting up copious amounts of blood.
He's John Hurting it from Aliens, or Alien, on the table.
Yes.
Spitting up blood everywhere.
And a bunch of unmarked cop cars show up and start trying to run the ambulance off the road. And, like, soldiers start jumping out.
And Lena is dragged out of the ambulance and tranquilized.
And then we get a card that says Area X.
Yes.
And she wakes up and immediately throws up.
Yeah.
And the psychologist, Dr. Ventress, walks into the room and is like, those sedatives, they give you a nasty hangover, eh? Why don't you have a seat in this chair? And Lena is like, who the fuck are you?
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Ventress starts answering her very vaguely. Ventress is more interested in learning about Kane, because she's also like, where did he come from, you know?
Did he say anything?
Did he say anything? What did he say?
Yes, and a very interesting character touch, was that Ventress's hands are always moving. She's always checking her nails, or in later scenes, she's playing almost with a fidget toy, or she's rubbing her thumb against her finger. Like, her hands are always in motion, which was a good character touch. But anyways, they take Lena to a window in Area X, and you can see a weirdly iridescent bubble over the surrounding forest, which they term the Shimmer.
The Shimmer, yes. And it's the Southern Breach, is what it's called?
Area X is Southern Reach. They mention it once. In the book, it's called the Southern Reach, and the Shimmer is in Area X,
yeah.
But they don't really make it clear. But technically, yes, the base is Southern Reach.
But they also reveal to Lena that Kane, right now, is suffering from multiple organ failures and is bleeding really badly internally.
Yes. And then we get a little backstory. The Shimmer started 3 years ago when a meteor hit the lighthouse. And the area is expanding slowly. It used to be just the lighthouse, and now it's kind of consumed a small town.
And like a swampland, which they've been evacuating under the guise of a chemical spill.
Yes.
So the public at large has no idea about this place.
But nobody ever comes back from investigating it, and it is expanding, and they don't know what to do.
Yes, and we also get a little bit of a flashback, I think, at this point, of Lena and Kane, and they seem to be a happy married couple.
Yeah, they're talking, they're joking.
Around in bed.
They're getting it on, but we're spared the obviously impending sex that's happening. The movie does not need to make us watch that to understand they have sex.
And so then we go to a little bit later in the evening, clearly, where Lena is approached by a lady. I think it's Josie?
No, it's Anya.
Anya approaches her and invites her to come hang out with this gaggle of gals.
Yes, so we have Anya, who's a paramedic. We have Josie, who's a physicist who just finished her postdoc. And we have Cassie, who's a... I'm not clear if she's a geologist or a meteorologist, because she's a geologist. They talk about her as a geologist, but she talks about, like, measuring the magnetic fields around the Shimmer.
Yeah, that's what she's in charge of.
And it's like, what geologist is out here measuring magnetic fields on rocks?
She is.
Apparently.
And after sitting down and talking with these women... Lena learns that they're in the midst of, like, kind of getting ready for something, and when she presses them further on it, she learns that in a few days' time, they're going to be the next group going into the breach.
Yes, and so Lena heads to Dr. Ventress and is like, I want to come on the expedition, because Dr. Ventress herself is heading the expedition. And it pretty much goes as that conversation expects. The Dr. Ventress is like, well, why do you want to go? And she's like, because Kane. It's like, you haven't told the others about Kane. And she's like, no. And the psychologist is like, I guess you can come.
And she's, I think in this scene also mentions that it might be best to keep Kane on the DL. Not mention that she knows him. Or well, at least her and Lena both together decide this.
Well, it's specifically, she's like, I understand you haven't told them about your relationship with Kane. I think that's a smart decision.
Yeah. And they're like, clearly you're qualified. You're a skilled biologist, so like having you
Also an ex-soldier.
Yeah, she was in the army for 7 years, so she's also no slouch there. So they're like, great, yeah, qualified.
Yes.
Come with.
And so we get the team of five ladies all with their backpacks and their fatigues
and
their guns, and they head into the Shimmer.
And then immediately Lena wakes up. Oh, after another flashback, I think.
Yes, well, she's having kind of a dream, I think, of something that has happened in the past, which is her having an affair with the professor who invited her to the barbecue.
Yeah, that guy in the beginning. Boo. But then she wakes up in a tent, and she seems very confused, and she comes out of the tent and meets the group, and they're all sitting around in their camp counting their rations. And she walks up to the group and says, you know, where are we? What the heck? And they all kind of talk it out, and we learn that they have been here for 3 or 4 days, at least, at this point, but none of them remember their time here at all. Like, the last thing they remembered was walking through the breach. They don't remember anything after that. They're just woken up here. But judging by the amount of rations they've gone through, they've been here for a couple of days.
Yeah, and compasses and radios have all stopped working. And Dr. Ventress is kind of like, yes, we've been sending expeditions for 3 years, and none of them have ever replied. Are you stunned that the communications technology has stopped working?
And everybody's like, fair point, okay.
Yes. And one thing I do want to point out is the whole time they're in the Shimmer, they've very subtly laid an effect over air and water, so it's got just that very faint soap bubble iridescence, which is a really good way of reminding you it's not quite right.
It looks to me like gasoline.
Yeah, it's like gasoline on a puddle or soap bubble.
Yeah, that colorful sheen.
But it's very subtle, and it's in the air, it's not on everything, which I like, because it's not overwhelming.
No, it isn't, but it's clearly, it's omnipresent, but it's never oppressive.
Yes.
And so, yeah, this group gathers up their camp equipment, and then they decide to carry on, because they don't, because their compass doesn't work, they're trying to reach the lighthouse, is the objective of this particular journey, because Dr. Ventress wants to learn what the cause of all this is. And so they decide, using the trajectory of the sun, that they just want to head south.
Well, yeah, if they go south, they'll get to the lighthouse, but also the lighthouse is on the coast, and then they can just follow the coast down
to where the breach ends on its side.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the breach, I think, is just the actual transition between. I think they're in the shimmer.
Okay.
Yeah. To be fair, it's never, like, clearly
No, they just
termed,
kind of throw it around, but
they only say shimmer when they're in there, sure. So I think it's the shimmer.
So the next scene we get is them coming upon a kind of bayou-style cabin that is sunk partially into a swamp, except it's covered in these beautiful wildflowers, but of all different types. But Lena points out that they're all growing from the same stalk. Like, it's the same plant, it just seems to be growing different flowers off the same plant, which it shouldn't be able to do.
Yes, and so she makes this observation, and Josie goes inside the house and then comes out, and it's like, there's nothing interesting inside, at which point she is forcefully yanked back into the house.
Mm-hmm. And we get our first jump scare as Vicky leaps.
I was expecting something to happen, and it was still a surprise.
And it did, yeah.
So the team jump into the flooded house to rescue her. Whatever is in the water remains unseen until they manage to get Josie out of the house. And then it turns out to be a giant-ass crocodile.
Huge crocodile. And it decides that it's not quite done with the group just yet, so it trounces its way onto land and is like, get in my mouth.
Yes,
hey,
and
everyone.
This scene has a really good body language storytelling, in that the other four girls, like, they're not panicking, they're trying to shoot it, but Lena stays totally calm, drops down to one knee, and immediately takes it out like a trained soldier, and you're immediately reminded that she is the actual one with combat experience.
Yeah, she's been in the army before, and so yeah, she takes this thing out, and then they get around to examining the crocodile.
With a really cool shot from inside the crocodile's mouth as it's pried open.
Yeah, one of them's holding the mouth open while Lena and Ventress, yeah, they take a look inside, and they point out that this crocodile is growing teeth in its mouth that it shouldn't be able to grow for its species.
Yeah, and they also say it's growing teeth like a shark, like it suddenly got weird rows upon rows of teeth that it shouldn't have. At which point we cut back to Hazmat Man interviewing Lena, and Lena starts talking about how they saw duplicates and doubles, and the guy's like, well, was it possible that it was a hallucination? And she's like, I don't know, I thought it was, but everybody in the group saw things that were duplicate and things that were doubled, so I don't know.
Don't really know. And the group decides to move on, and they come to what appears to be an old, dilapidated army base that has been overtaken by the shimmer. And there are flowers growing all upside the building, very, very much abandoned.
Yes, well, it's not flowers, it's lichen. Because Lena says that the mutations appear almost malignant, like tumors, as it grows. Like, lichen shouldn't be growing on this building, but it's absorbing everything like a tumor does.
Yeah. And they make their way inside of the building, and Lena discovers a board that has the names of the previous five people that went on the previous expedition, including Kane's name.
It's more than five, I think. I think it's nine.
It's a few people, yeah. But various names are scratched out, but she points out that it's like they were trying to set up a patrol, and somebody was patrolling.
Yes, and while she's observing this, is it Ventress? I think finds a memory card in a bag labeled "For Those Who Follow." And which they play.
Yeah, she's like, that means us. So they crack that open and they put it in their video camera, and we get some grainy footage of the army men, and they've got one of them kind of, and they're holding him, and who should appear but Kane?
And he's like, all right, you're all right, buddy, like, just hang out. And the guy's like, yeah, I'm okay, I'm good. And he's like, okay, take a deep breath. And then fucking, like, stabs him and slowly cuts a flap of his stomach out, and everyone's like, this guy's clearly gone insane. But then he pulls back the, like, stomach flap, and the guy's intestines are literally moving like snakes.
Like snakes coiled around a tree.
Like, they're in motion. And Anya is like, it's a trick of the light. And it's like, I don't know what fucking video you're watching.
Especially because at the end of the video, Kane sticks his hand in the guts to kind of show it slithering against his hand.
Yeah, like one of them like wraps around his hand. And she's like, it's a trick of the light. And it's like, you're a paramedic. You've seen intestines.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, man. Come on. I know it's freaky, but come on. But anyway, they decide to look around the building a little bit more, because they're going to have to stay here for the night. And they make their way into a room that was once a pool, it looks like, but it's been mostly drained. Except the end of the pool is this entire kind of stalk of plant growth and flowers and fungi. And they approach it and realize that that's a person.
Yeah, and it's...
Or it was.
It's Intestine Slithery Man, based on the positioning, so we know it happened in kind of the pool. Mm-hmm. But the guy specifically is like... His torso and skull have grown up the wall as part of the mushrooms, much separate from his, like, legs, which are sticking out at
near the bottom.
And it's very weird looking. For those of you who've played The Last of Us, it's almost like when one of the infected dies against a wall and becomes kind of like a mushroom with the wall.
And Anya finds the knife that was used during the recording in the water right by this stock. And she's like, I'm not staying here tonight, guys. And Ventress is like, sucks to suck, man. It's too late in the evening. We have to stay here.
Yes. And then we get a flashback to Kane leaving on this mission. And he's leaving a day early, right now, with very little affection, and it's kind of implied, and it's confirmed later in the movie, but it's implied at this point he knew about the affair Lena was having, mm-hmm. and that's part of why he's going on this
exactly
trip.
And definitely why he's so unceremoniously leaving a day early.
Yeah, and it's like, here's your orange juice, here's a forehead kiss, bye.
See you never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, then it's nighttime. And Lena and Anya are having a whispered conversation. I don't really know what it's about, because PS4 won't put fucking subtitles.
So quiet. Everything in this freaking movie's whispered. Everything.
I get the impression they're pretty much like, don't like this place. Don't like this place neither.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah, but then they hear something outside, and Lena and everybody...
Not quite.
Oh.
Lena goes to check on Ventress first. Like, Anya's like, should you check on Ventress? And Lena's like, yeah, I guess I will, because I can't sleep.
Right.
And Ventress and Lena are discussing where the lighthouse is. But then she also mentions, like, why did Kane say he was coming on this suicide mission? Because Dr. Ventress
right.
had to profile everybody.
Right. So she's clearly digging, I guess. I imagine she already kind of knows in her head, but maybe she's looking for some kind of confirmation as to why it is Kane joined up with such a dangerous mission. Because I get the sense from Anya's character that she's very, very regretful.
Lena, you mean?
Lena, sorry. Lena, yeah. And she's very, very regretful, and that her going on this mission is almost like punishment for what she did to him, so...
Or at least she feels like she owes him, because she drove him to come here, she owes finding out what has happened to him to help fix him while he's hemorrhaging away in Southern Reach.
Hemorrhaging away.
His organs are failing and he's got internal bleeding. What do you want me to say?
I know, it's a funny way of putting it. But then they hear the sound outside and they go out to investigate, and Lena notices that with her light that the perimeter fence has been busted through by something. Something ripped its way through.
Yes, and then Cass is grabbed by what appears to be a giant bear and dragged off screaming.
Dragged off screaming into the night. And they chase for a little while, but then are like, okay, this isn't happening. So that's Rip Cass, or at least Cass is gone right now.
Yes, and so we kind of cut to daylight, and Anya is like, I want to go back. And Ventress is like, I'm going to the lighthouse with or without you.
Mm-hmm.
And Lena sort of makes the point in the ensuing fight that they've been here for 6 days, they don't have a working compass, they may as well go to the lighthouse, which should only be another day or two away, and follow the coast south. So we can leave, which Anya wants to do, but this is the best way to make sure we're going in actual direction and not just wandering around in here forever.
Yeah, exactly. But they do eventually leave this place and move together, and while they're out looking kind of through the woods and scouting, Lena finds a couple of deers.
And they're, like, fucked up deer, but, like, aesthetically fucked up. Like, their horns are growing.
Aesthetically
fucked up. They are! They're not, like, horrifying zombie deer. Like, their antlers are growing flowers yeah, and stuff like that. And, like, their shape is, like, used to be a deer, but is not anymore.
They pretty.
And we get a little more of that acoustic guitar. And for the most part, the soundtrack of this movie is largely only that acoustic guitar.
It's almost road trippy.
Yeah, but it's weird because it fits the movie in a way I was not expecting and cannot articulate. I cannot tell you why, like, chill folk acoustic guitar fits the bizarre world of the Shimmer so well, but it does.
It does, for sure. But they end up reconvening on a, I guess, it's like a housing area. They've clearly arrived on the town now.
Valina finds Cass's corpse.
Right, right.
While she's scouting, and Cass
has been
looks
ripped
very
apart.
Bad.
It's been ripped apart.
And then she returns to the group and is like, so Cass is dead. And then they head to the small town that's been absorbed by the Shimmer.
Yeah, and the small town is filled with people, except made out of flowers. It's flowers that have grown in the shape of people everywhere. And
which,
they,
things being what they are, suggest those probably were people.
Probably at one point, yeah. And that's when, who
Josie.
Is it? Josie points out that she thinks that this place is refracting in the same way that prisms refract light, except that it's refracting everything.
Yes,
DNA, which is why things are weirdly spliced in with one another, why the crocodile is growing weird teeth.
But also why the radios don't work because
yeah. Everything
signals,
is being scrambled.
The signals are being refracted, yeah. So they don't make any sense.
Absolutely everything is being scrambled. And, like, there's more fucking... And one thing that I've got a note about this a couple times in this movie is that, like, for scientists, they're really grabby with everything with their bare fucking hands. It's like, what a weird flower. Let me touch it. And yeah. I don't know. I'm sure it wouldn't help, given the powers at play, but you'd think that... Because, I mean, we clearly see that they have that worry with all the hazmat people interviewing Lena. Why would they not, you know, be set up with hazmat stuff when they're sending people into the breach? I don't get it. It annoyed me.
That's fair. I have no good answer.
No.
But anyways...
Just, every single time there's something weird, they're like, let me poke it. Let's lick it.
Yes, well, they don't lick anything.
I know, but...
Josie points out, much to the disruption of the rest of the group, that she suspects their DNA is already undergoing the process of refracting. It's already being changed. And then we get another flashback to Lena having the affair. She gets out of bed and confirms that Kane knows about the affair and tells the other professor to get out of her house.
Yeah, and she's like, this is the last time.
And he's like, you don't hate me, you hate yourself for this. And she's like, what about your wife? And he's like, my wife is innocent, I love my wife. And it's like, you can't talk about how you love your wife while you're sleeping with another lady.
Yeah, come
like,
on, man.
Sorry,
come
it just
on,
doesn't
man.
Work.
Not working.
So, back in the house, Anya wakes Lena up at gunpoint and then knocks her out.
And we see that Anya has taken everybody and tied them up to a chair. So she's clearly gone around everybody while they're sleeping, knocked them out, and then tied them to chairs. And she's unhinged right now because she's started to notice that her fingerprints are moving and changing.
Yes, and she also took Lena's locket, which has a picture of Kane. And so she's basically concluded that because Lena didn't tell them about Kane, Lena is a liar, and if Lena is a liar, the bear must not have taken Cass. Lena must have killed
yeah.
Cass
and we can
somehow.
See, we can see that she's clearly starting to go a little bit nuts here with everything that's going on and maybe some influence from the Shimmer.
Yes. And then we hear a scream that sounds very much like Cass
yeah.
begging for help.
And Anya's like, oh, great. I'll just go grab her then. And leaves them tied to their chairs and she goes and running off.
And then there's a loud noise and a sudden silence. And oh, hey... It's the bear.
It's Mr. Bear.
It's not really a bear anymore.
No, it's like a bear's skull mounted on a horse bear.
That's a fairly accurate description, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it comes slowly walking into the room, and it's making a sound that is very human-like.
Every time it opens its mouth, it sounds like Cass saying help.
Yeah, like, help, help.
But specifically Cass's mm-hmm. voice. It's not just any voice.
Yeah. And it takes its time walking between each of them, smelling them, and it starts opening up its mouth like it's about ready to take a big old bite out of Josie when Anya appears with her gun and is like, oh my god!
Yes, it's... and so the bear charges.
After she starts unloading at it with her gun.
Yes, and the bear knocks over Josie, who's starting to free herself, and then just fucking mauls Anya to death.
Rips her apart, tears off her jaw. Yeah, she's
Yeah, like Anya
she
was
dead.
Not
she dead.
Winning that fight. But Josie has freed herself, gets the gun, and just fucking unloads an entire magazine into the bear's head.
Which is fucking awesome. So that's rip Anya, but also rip Mr. Bear.
Yes. And then Ventress is like, I have to go find the lighthouse. Goodbye.
She's like, shit's falling apart real fast. I'm leaving right now because I need to make it to the lighthouse no matter what.
Yes, so Lena and Josie are like, okay, we're going to wait till the morning in case of more horrible mutant bears.
And to the morning, they do wait. And the next scene is them sitting up in front of the house, ready to kind of go on, continue on their odyssey across the land. When her and Josie begin talking about what they want, and Josie points out that Dr. Ventress wants to understand what's going on here, but Lena wants to destroy it.
Or fight it.
And Josie doesn't want either of those things. And we see at this point that Josie's starting to grow grass on her arm.
Yes, and she also says, or rather, Lena confirms she checked her blood and finds it is mutating or refracting.
Yeah.
And Josie mentions that the bear, she thinks, sounds like Cass, because as the bear killed Cass, some part of her was refracted and became part of the bear, and that's why when the bear opened its mouth, it sounded like Cass.
I think
like
she specifically mentions that, like, it was a terrible way to go because she died in a moment of absolute terror and agony, and that's the part that was copied over.
Yes. And then Josie is like, anyways, I don't think I want any more to do with this. I'm gonna walk away and become one of these plant people
now. Yeah, I'm gonna be a flower person now.
She's very not concerned. She's like, okay, I become flowers,
she's
yes.
She's probably the person most in control of her destiny in this movie, and she decides she's going to be a flower person now, and off she does.
Well, I think she sees, like, the vines growing on her arm, and she just accepts that. She's like, okay.
Yeah. And so she walks away, and Lena gives chase for a bit, but then she turns a corner, and there's lots of flower people, and it's pretty indistinguishable which one is her. And so Lena's like, alright, guess it's just me now.
Yes, and then we get a shot of her making it to the coast, where she drops her backpack and keeps only her gun. And she's walking on the beach, and the beach is full of trees that are made of, like, weird
crystals.
Yeah. And so we see Lena reaching the lighthouse, which is still lit. And there are some human rib cages partly buried in the sand, and, like, some skulls and a bunch of bones laid out real nice.
Yeah.
Which she's not concerned about at all. She's like, these rib cages
are not concerning.
To be fair,
at this point, I'd just be like, expecting anything. Nothing would be surprising anymore.
That's fair.
However, she is still kind of surprised, because she heads into the lighthouse to find that there is a giant hole in the wall, which is where the meteor entered. No, hole in the wall first, and then she looks and there's a big hole in the floor where the meteor clearly penetrated to. But more than that, there's a video camera set up and a corpse sitting against the wall that is absolutely torched.
And the whole inside of the lighthouse is covered in white fungus
white
as well.
White fungal, yeah.
So Lena opens the camcorder and watches the tape, and it shows, like, the bones outside
and
the
beach.
Trees. And then it moves clearly to whatever position it's in now, and Kane walks and sits in front of the camera.
And he's like, hey TikTok, this is gonna be my last video. Been real trippy time here.
Well,
anyways, gonna kill myself now.
It's more like,
I know.
I don't know if I'm a man anymore, or if I ever was a man. Also, my flesh moves like liquid, and I don't like it. Have you ever seen a phosphorus grenade?
And we're all like, oh boy. And he's like, I'm gonna show you. And he takes his...
But first he tells the guy behind the camera to find Lena.
Yeah, he says, hey, if you make it out of here, by the way, find Lena. And then he pulls the pin out of his grenade and goes, 3, 2, 1, and blows up.
Well, catches fire,
yeah, yeah.
He's clearly the smoldered corpse.
Yes, and then we see, as he's burning up and dying, the man behind the camcorder move around to the front and turn back and look, and we see that it's Kane.
Also Kane.
It's another Kane.
And Lena's like, nope, and shuts the camcorder.
Don't
want to
deal with that. But I do want to deal with this hole.
Yes.
Crazy about that hole.
So she decides that's where she ought to go next.
Yeah.
And she finds Ventress, who's talking in a vaguely echoey voice, and starts talking about how it is inside of her, and it is not like us, but wants to encompass everything.
Yeah, it wants to touch everything and to change it.
And then she says it wants to become everything and break it down to the smallest pieces. Total annihilation. So, name drop of the film there.
Yeah, and then she tilts her head back and starts spraying light out of her mouth and eyes.
And becomes a weird phosphorescent...
glow cloud.
Yeah, like it's a person that then glow dissolves cloud. And then reforms as like a weird, ever-changing orb. It was very Lovecraftian in the sense
that... So here's the part of... Or rather, for the rest of this movie, it's going to get harder and harder for us to explain what's going on, because it does get a little mind-bendy here, so just please bear with us.
Yes, and like I was saying, it's very Lovecraftian in the sense that when Lovecraft, it's like, it's indescribable because it's changing all the time. That's pretty much what the orb is it's... I can tell you it's a glowy orb, and it's changing, and that's really as much as I can in human words express about the orb.
Lena's pretty enamored by it as well. She goes up and takes a look into its, like, glowing mouth, I guess? And a bit of blood drops from off of her nose and falls into the cloud, where it starts to duplicate, like, cells.
And mutate. And then the orb mutates into a person shape, which Lena shoots, which does not affect it. And she starts running back for the hole. And then the human orb thing? It's like a weird green, not quite proportionally correct human.
It's like the shape of a person.
But not quite. It's like its limbs are slightly too long, and it's slightly too narrow. But it somehow beats her back to the lighthouse floor and starts mirroring her actions exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Which makes it tough to leave because it's in between her and the door. So every single time she moves forward, it moves forward. If she moves left or right, it moves left or right. So it's clearly blocking her way. She manages to try and get past it, and after getting into a little bit of scuffle with it, gets to the door. However, it pins her up against the door, preventing her from leaving, and almost crushes her a little bit.
I think it is crushing her, and she can't breathe while it's happening, and it's only kind of once it moves back slightly that she, like, stumbles away and kind of falls over, but the thing stumbles and collapses next to her, still mirroring, and that to me was a very weird, like, because I've seen movies in which you have, like, mirroring and stuff before, but that it would go so far to be mirroring the collapse and stuff, and the way it's moving, too, is it's, Lena is very shaky, obviously, like, she's just almost been suffocated, and the thing is mirroring her movements exactly when she sways real big, it does that also, but the little jitters aren't there, no. It's too smooth.
It is much, much more smooth, yeah. And so eventually she ends up kind of standing up, after being knocked out, I think, for a little bit, and we get our...
Almost knocked out, I think. I don't think she's ever...
Almost
quite.
Knocked out. But, she's like, okay, this isn't working. So she takes a phosphorus grenade that is still in the corpse cane's possession. And she, takes that out and holds out her hand slowly, and the thing mirrors her, and she takes the grenade and puts it in the hand of the clone, and then pulls out the pin.
Just before she pulls out the pin, though, the not-quite-human green human starts to horrifyingly turn into Lena. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts developing features that don't quite look human, and then... it becomes a perfect copy of Lena, and then Lena pulls the pin and runs. And then not Lena catches fire because it's holding a phosphorus grenade and turns back into a green human shape. It's so hard to describe what the weird orb human thing is doing.
It's like an unrendered human avatar from a video game.
Yeah, but, like, disproportionate somehow. It's, like, the very early model where they don't care.
Find it quite as bizarre as you do.
I've
seen a million of that type of thing.
That's fair. I found it weird and vaguely distressing. But anyways, no longer Lena touches Kane, which reignites his remains, but also touches the wall of the lighthouse, which is causing, like, the fungus to start to burn. And quite quickly, the whole lighthouse becomes kind of a conflagration, and the... creature actually crawls back into its hole, setting everything even more on fire.
Yeah, and at this point we see Lena standing outside of the lighthouse, and she's looking back, and the entire thing is ablaze. Just a big inferno. And the crystalline trees that are all along the beach also start to glow and collapse in on themselves into kind of shimmering gold-like liquid, I guess, that's kind of pools.
It was almost burnt slag to me. Like, they're also catching fire, and then they sort of collapse into unshaped slag that's still smoldering. Was kind of the vibe I got. I didn't necessarily get that it was collapsing back into, like, golden liquid. I think it was collapsing into like, ashes.
Right.
Though I could be wrong. It's not particularly clear. But anyways, we get a shot back at Southern Reach, where we see the iridescence that marks the shimmer is no longer there. The air is no longer iridescent.
Gone. Yeah. And it's back in the interview room.
We've caught up
now. Now we're caught up to this part of the movie, yeah. And Lena learns that Kane has recovered since the shimmer vanished. Like, he's no longer contorting or coughing up blood. His organs are no longer failing. And so she's allowed to go visit him.
Yes. She also learns that a team has reached the lighthouse and must have been able to communicate, because they've communicated that the lighthouse is ash and there's nothing
weird. No.
Well, presumably I would think they find the, like, rib cages and skulls and stuff all laid out weird, but there's no more, like, crystalline tree or horse bears or anything like that.
So Lena goes into Kane's room, and they stand up, and she asks him if he's really Kane, and he responds, "I don't think so."
And then he asks if she's Lena, which she never answers, because she doesn't seem to know the answer to that. Like,
yeah, she doesn't respond. The two of them, however, hug, but then it's revealed in their irises and up-close shots that there's still shimmer present in their eyes.
Yes, which kind of leaves it open to, like, if it's going to, if the shimmer still lives on in them and it's going to continue being weird and alien, or if it's just, like, they're the last remains of it. That's kind of unclear. Although it is interesting to note that Kane does seem to start responding to Lena now that it's also not clear if she's actually Lena. Because, of course, when we first meet Kane, he won't
hug her
back, he won't do anything. Yeah. So, kind of an interesting, ambiguous ending there.
Mm-hmm. But then we get our credits. So that's Annihilation.
Yeah.
For you, in a nutshell. So now that we're done breaking it down for you, is the part of the podcast where we assign it some ratings. It's Victoria.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy this movie?
I'm going to give it a 7. I think it was really interesting in that it was kind of a smart horror movie. We haven't really seen a lot of those.
Like Hereditary is a smart horror movie.
No, I mean in the sense of, like, it's talking kind of about the essence of what it means to be a person and stuff like that. It's not like, here's a guy in a mask going to go kill some dudes.
True.
I really liked how restrained they were with the soundtrack. I thought that really helped emphasize the weird alienness. The use of effects, like the very subtle iridescence in the sky, I think was all really, really good. The acting was great, so I'm going to give it a solid 7. I enjoyed it.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 7 as well, actually, just because, I enjoyed it. The acting was pretty solid, and the only real problem I've got with it is the fact that they're touching everything, and that is not how they would be doing that.
It's not proper science.
They're incredibly irresponsible scientists. But, like, that's my only issue, so yeah. But it's a big issue, so 7. Now on a scale of 1 to 10, how well made was it?
I'm going to give it a 7 also. The cinematography was great. The way they managed to have the themes of, like, cell mitosis and stuff throughout without constantly showing you cell mitosis, like the fingers in the water glass, that kind of thing. I already mentioned the faint iridescence. Like, I think that was all really good. My biggest criticism, frankly, is that certain parts of the movie are dark without kind of functional ambient light to see, and they whisper fucking everything. So there were definitely conversations where I was like, I would love to know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I assume you're talking science, because I can't hear you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it a 7, primarily for the whispering.
Yeah. Yeah, The Whispering kind of did kill it for me as well a little bit. Although, I imagine if I saw it in the theater or if we possessed any kind of decent surround sound system, it would have been okay.
Or subtitles.
Subtitles. So, I'm actually going to give it an 8 because I thought the shots were really good. The Natalie Portman is awesome in it. Everybody's pretty awesome in it. The whole cast of the ladies going into the Shimmer, they're all really, really great. So, yeah, I'd give it a solid 8. So now on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it?
I think I'm going to give it a 7 also. And it's almost entirely because of the end. Like, I really was distressed by the thing that is not quite a human trying to be a human, but slightly too smooth to really be a human. That, like, I jumped at the bear and I jumped at the crocodile. But it wasn't really, like, terrifying. I don't know. Maybe I just don't like facing things that are almost but not quite human. Maybe that's why I also don't like zombies and stuff. But I was emotionally concerned while that whole thing was playing out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it a 7, which I think means triple sevens, which is lucky on slot machines or something.
You give a lot of sevens. Sevens is, I think, probably your most common.
I don't think I've ever given a straight sevens before, though.
You have at least 1 7, I think, every time.
No.
Ish. Obviously, there's movies that suck that were like, it just sucks.
Silence of Lambs definitely got 2 tens and a 9.
That's true. That's true. Silence of Lambs special. For me, I think I'm going to give it a 2. It's, the bear is unsettling, I suppose. But to me, it was not... I was never horrified, and it didn't have the same trappings as a horror movie. I would almost classify it as a sci-fi.
I think it's classified as a horror sci-fi.
Yeah, but yeah. I'd almost like sci-fi thriller, even. Like, I wasn't horrified by it.
Well, like I was saying, all of my horror came from a weird emotional dread at the not-quite-human thing. If that wasn't in the film, I would agree with you, it's like a 2.
Yeah.
But I just didn't like that thing, so. Yeah. 7.
So anyways, that was Annihilation for you guys.
Join us next week when we cover The Mummy. No, not the 1999 Brendan Fraser.
Alas.
And no, not the one from the 70s. And no, not the one from the 50s. The original The Mummy from 1932.
Although I wish we were watching the Brendan Fraser one because I love that movie.
We can just watch that anytime. That's because true. The Mummy is it's fantastic. Yeah. Which is, I think, will be really interesting because I know you've never seen the original Mummy. To kind of compare how the story has mutated.
They're going to be nothing the same. Nothing alike.
You might be surprised.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Because the 1999 one is a remake of the 70s, is a remake of a remake.
No.
In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Instagram or Twitter at ScaredyPodCats. Get it? Because we're a podcast with cats.
Ha ha.
Every time. You can also email us at scaredycatsthepodcast@gmail.com. We don't check our email as often as we check Instagram and Twitter.
But if y'all start emailing us, we will.
Yes. So if you want to get in touch with us, if you have movie suggestions, things you want us to watch, or just want to chat, you're welcome
any
to do so.
Any good jokes?
Yeah, if you have any good jokes, we'll take those too.
Totally. Always take good jokes.
Pictures of your cats?
Yeah.
Tom's like, I don't like that one as much. And until then, I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvet.
I'm Thomas J. Sotvet. Thank you for listening, and be cool to each other.